Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Hey, listeners, thanks for joining me on this amazing episode of the Negotiations Ninja podcast. Today, we have Dan Oblinger on the show again, repeat guest, wonderful guy, excellent at what he does. He's a hostage negotiator, and we're talking today all about the quality of questions that we ask. I think we all agree that we need to ask good questions, but how do we do that? We start talking about things like garbage questions. What are garbage questions? How can we eliminate them from our vocabulary? And how can we start asking better questions, which Dan calls million-dollar questions, to elicit more information, more body language, more tonality, more of a story from the other party? Fascinating conversation, as always, with Dan. I think you'll really enjoy this one. Thanks so much for listening. Dan, how are you?
I am blessed, Mark, to be back.
It's great to have you back, man. I always enjoy our conversations and love seeing all the contributions that you make online for what you're doing, negotiations, listening, questions, all of that kind of fun stuff. But for the listeners who don't know you and don't know about you, maybe you could share with them who you are and what you do.
I am a hostage negotiator, and I translate what I know and what I've experienced for the corporate world, or actually for just about any audience that will have me.
Love it. And you've been super successful in breaking down what seem to be very complex tasks or complex techniques into very easily digestible pieces. And I think your book really did that super well in terms of how to be a better listener and how to use listening in a much better way. And today I want our discussion to really focus around the other side of the coin. You know, if we're going to listen, we also have to ensure that we're asking good questions. And one of the things that I read of yours recently, you talked about garbage questions. So often we go into negotiations thinking that we're asking good questions or the right questions, but sometimes we just don't ask great questions. What are garbage questions?
Well, you know, for your listeners, if you've never thought about how and why you ask questions the way that you do, I think it might be like Paleolithic man walking through the jungle or walking through a forest, and there's a bunch of creatures out there, and they're real enough, and you interact with them, and some of them are useful to you, and some of them are just mysterious. And that's how I was too, as a questioner, as an interrogator, you could say, in the best sense of the word. But you have to start studying the wildlife if you're going to get better. There's a whole taxonomy of questions out there. There's a whole kingdom of question types, and some are better used in certain situations than others. And I would say probably in the last 2 months of my studying this art of listening, I've really dived into question selection, question creation, tailoring questions, and it has made a rich difference in the way that I communicate with other people.
Awesome. How should we be planning our questions or selecting our questions maybe ahead of time or in the midst of a discussion?
I think most of the work is pre-work, because how we ask questions is a habit. Now, you have a preferred way of asking questions. Not you, Mark. Obviously, you do too. But all of your audience, everyone out there listening to us right now, you have a preferred way that you like to receive information from people, and it's probably horrible. So I think it goes back to this concept that you've brought into the conversation of garbage questions. I think there's a lot of really low-value questions. I call them garbage questions. And if you're using those, you'll get garbage answers, and you'll have garbage relationships with people, and that's not good. If you want to be a great procurement professional, if you want to be a salesperson, if you want to be a negotiator of any sort, but particularly a hostage negotiator, you want to ask questions that deserve an answer, not questions that demand an answer, not questions that just want some information or some data. We talked about this. Listening is hard. And listening, if it's not done well, is complex. It shouldn't have to be, but we make it complex. And one way that we do, one way we make it harder for ourselves to be good listeners, is we receive other people's stories on our terms. We dictate to other people how they give us information. Stories are easy to listen to, and you can use questions just to invite a story. And then your role and your job as a listener is very simple.
So if we're going to get better at removing garbage questions from our vocabulary, and we want to improve on developing questions that deserve an answer. And I love that you've said that, because that's sort of how I view it as well. Like, if I'm going to ask a question, that question should deserve an answer. That's the highest quality of question. How do we ask those questions?
Here's the first thing. Understand that people judge you. They judge your ability as a listener. They judge your ability as a leader. They judge your ability as a lover based on how you ask questions. They don't think like that. Like, I don't start a conversation with you, Mark, saying, I'm going to see how this guy asks questions. We do it subconsciously. It's part of that bias that we all carry around with ourselves. And we judge so quickly that I will tell you within the first 3 to 4 words of a sentence, I'm forming a judgment about somebody and their quality of listening and questioning. And this is the best example I can give you. Look at the questions you ask. Do you start your questions, especially if you are a leader with authority in an organization, do you start your questions with, do you, can you, will you? Do you want to go to this meeting? Will you send me this email? Can you do this for me? You've immediately made it a yes or no. It is a question that is laden with authority. You're not actually seeking their preference on the matter at hand. You don't actually want to know yes or no. You're telling them yes. You're supplying the answer with the question, and that is the absolute most garbage question. When you ask your kid, you had a good time at school, right? Any question you end with right and a question mark, that's a garbage question, because you're supplying the answer with the question. Questions are about inquiry and discovery and encounter if they're done well. And they will open people and their stories up to you. And that is how we build great relationships. When we supply our own answer with our own question, ain't nobody got time for that.
Love it. And so, I mean, a lot of us get into the habit of asking these garbage questions or these leading questions where we're not really getting great answers out of it as a result of the questions that we're asking. Is it a function of us just being more curious, or are there certain things that we can start to change in our vocabulary about how to structure our open-ended sentences so that we can get more or better responses?
It is an issue of habitude. And it is an issue of virtue, and that is that firm disposition to be excellent, that firm disposition to do good for these other folks. If they're worthy of our questions, then they're also capable and worthy of providing the answer on their own terms. So if you have a request, you know, these, one of the examples was, can you send me that email? If you have a request, don't make it a question. Ask politely.
Yes.
Because you are conditioning those around you to anticipate garbage questions. If that's how you do it, they're bracing for impact. They're not preparing to actually tell you any story. They're preparing to nod their head and say yes and go do what you've asked, with air quotes. So if it's a request, make it a request. If it's a question, go right to the front of the question. Chop off those throwaway dependent clauses. Can you, will you, do you, are you? Just don't ever say those. And instead, look at the first word, because they're going to judge you on the quality of that first couple word phrase anyhow. And I am trying to train myself to start my questions with how and what as a default. If I'm going to have a habit, I want to ask how and what questions more often than anything else. You know, some literature and some training, some philosophies of questioning, they'll say, well, you can also ask where and when and who. And I will tell you, and the FBI would also tell you, by the way, that those are fairly low value. They're not garbage. They're a decent question, but they're not going to invite a true story, and they're not going to let people tell it on their own terms. How and what tend to be questions about process and principles and storytelling. And I encourage all of you out there to try those first. And I'm kind of leaving one guy out, and that's why. And that's kind of a special subset. Why questions are a totally different animal, if we're going to use that same taxonomy metaphor. And we can talk about that too.
So when we're asking what and how, we're trying to ask really good open-ended questions. I mean, literally, we're trying to open up the conversation to get the conversation going, to get the story moving. And so the intention there with those, I would assume, is to get the other party talking so that we can get more information. Is that correct?
It is. And if we do it this way, we get so much more than just information.
Yes.
When we invite people to tell a story, they're going to supply their emotions. They're going to supply their motivations right now. They're going to supply their perspective. They're going to provide their attitude towards whatever we're trying to accomplish with them if we're leading them. And they're going to use their own language. So the words that people choose to use as a listener, that's gold to me. I want them to use their language. I don't want them to adopt mine, because then I not only don't learn anything about them, I fail at the most basic level of relationship building because I make it about me. And now we're using my language. And all of that area of knowledge that I could have, all those good things I just mentioned and listed, they are close to me as a listener.
Yeah. And so you're almost confining them by doing that, using your language, and then you're not going to get their full expression of what they actually mean.
That's right. Because information is the simplest and the poorest level of communication quality you're ever going to get. If I ask you what your favorite color is and you say blue and I move on, how much do I know about you? But if I ask you to tell me the story of why you prefer the color blue and you explain that you had a favorite jumper when you were in school, when you were a little child that your mom made for you. I mean, so the story behind the information is what we really want, because that gives us insight to the person.
Incredible. I love that you've segregated why at the end. Why have you segregated why?
That's why. So Mark, and I feel like I know you pretty well for somebody I've never met in person. We interact all the time, you know, through LinkedIn, which is a wonderful platform for that. I've been on your podcast. You've seen a lot of my stuff. You've read my book. I follow a lot of your content. So we have a certain level of trust in our relationship because we know each other fairly well and we've never crossed each other, right? You and I can probably ask why questions all day long and get great stories and great knowledge. So why questions are not off the table. What I tell people in my workshops is be super careful with why questions. They are high risk and they are high reward. You want to get your relationship with people to the point where you can earnestly and honestly ask why questions, because they are the simplest path often to rich storytelling. When someone's emotional, when someone doesn't trust you yet, when someone's had a bad experience with authority, and you ask them a why question, it can often be viewed as questioning their motives, as pointing out failures, because why is often accusatory when people interpret it in a negative emotional frame of mind. So you have to be very careful with why. The tone of a why question is far more important than the tone of a how or a what question. Tone is always important, but with a why, it's life or death landing that why question without burning trust with people if they're expecting or anticipating that you might be judging their actions.
Amazing. And so an example of an accusatory question with why would be something like, why did you do that?
Right. When you could simply ask, how did we come to this decision? Or what all went into your decision to do this? You're inviting the same story. You're going to get the same data, but you are avoiding what is truly, honestly, it is just that word has a connotation that how and what do not. And it is far more emotional in content.
Fascinating. I find that sometimes when we ask our how and what questions and we're trying to empathize with the other party, sometimes there's a risk of over-empathizing. Do you believe that there's a risk of over-empathizing? And if we over-empathize, what is the danger that exists there?
That is such a good question, Mark. See, I feel like you're already surpassing me in your ability to ask questions because you do it so well and so often. So this is the deal. Empathy is the foundation for listening. And listening is empathy in motion. And we want people to form on their own this perception that we care about them. You are not empathetic. And in my book and in my experience, you're not very empathetic when you walk up to somebody and say, hey, I care about you. They already know that, then you're good. If they don't know that, or they suspect it, or they've already decided that you don't, then that'll blow up in your face.
Yeah, you're viewed as insincere at that point.
That is right. And you do not gain any empathy you didn't already have by telling somebody you care. People want to be shown that you care. You got to prove it. You have to earn it. The way you earn it, the fastest and most efficient way is listening deeply. So now comes to your question. Well, can we over-empathize? Well, that's a tough question. When I hear that, my initial reaction is you can, if I can qualify it by saying this. if we have the intention of being empathetic and we are not skillful about it, if the only way we know to be empathetic is to feel somebody else's feelings or to tell them I care or to tell them I have that same feeling, if we are direct about being empathetic, I have often found as a crisis negotiator, as a husband and as a father, that that will fail. And in that case, then I would say, yeah, well, then you over-empathize because if you were not empathetic, it blew up in your face. Now, what I'll tell you is this, that is probably not empathy. That is still making it about yourself. When you are trying to change your own feelings, when you are trying to match maybe a common experience or a common negative feeling that they're having with something that you have experienced or felt in your own life, that is why it blows up in your face. And it's not proper empathy. It's probably closer to like some twisted form of sympathy, trying to make it the same, matching it to yourself. So empathy in the purest form probably can't be overdone because it's making it about somebody else. But I think to answer your question, yeah, we can over-empathize because we move out of what is proper empathy and we move into some other dark areas of human interaction. When we try to be too direct and too forceful with matching people's emotions and thoughts, listening is covert, not overt. It is this essence, it's sleight of hand. I listen and make it about them and it is improvisational. I just work with what they're willing to tell me right now. And I hope that they'll be willing to tell me more and more as we talk. And that's great listening. And in that case, it really can't be overdone because you're letting them make the first moves across the dance floor here. And that's wonderful. When you try to take control and move it along and show how much you care, that is probably where your question would be a yes. That's when we overdo it and we don't get all those good graces that flow from a relationship where they know that we care about them.
Interesting.
I find that when we sometimes have conversations and we're listening, or we're trying to listen, sometimes something is said where maybe that triggers escalation in the conversation. Frustration starts to develop, anger starts to develop, and it can sometimes get out of control very, very quickly. I think for a lot of people listening today, one of the key skills that we all need to learn is, how do we control those types of situations? How do we get that conversation back in check? When it starts to escalate and people are starting to get frustrated or angry, how do we control that?
I think there are some strategies. There are several things I try to do in my own conversational life to try to keep emotions in check. And the first thing is self-care first. If you're not in control of your emotions, you will not be able to manage the emotions of someone else.
Yes.
So the first recommendation I have is anticipate an emotional confrontation. Anticipate today, no matter how well you play your cards, you may run into someone today who is going to make it personal towards you, is going to try to get a rise out of you emotionally, and is going to try to win the emotional battle by putting you on tilt. You have to anticipate that. I'll just borrow a page from the Stoic playbook. If you anticipate that, then you will not fall victim to that because you expected it. You were prepared for it, and it's not a surprise. I have noted my worst emotional reactions come when I get surprised by somebody else's negative emotions directed at me. Yes. So we have to anticipate that. If you're a great listener, you will not be as surprised as often as someone who is not a good listener. You will see the emotion in people much more clearly and earlier on. You'll detect it in that phone call where like, hey, can I meet you? You'll know something's up. And so you can kind of brace for impact, and that's helpful. The second thing is, some of the active listening techniques are good for self-care. If you feel yourself having a negative emotion, take a break, apologize, say, I'm sorry, I'm getting really angry. When I shouldn't, I understand you're just trying to communicate with me. And naming your own emotion actually is very helpful. Naming other people's emotions is one of the active listening skills. And I find that when we have a mission in a conversation to identify emotions and relieve them if they're negative, then actually I get less emotional. Like I have a job to do, so therefore I'm not focused inwardly. I am focused like a radome on that person and their emotions. One of the most important things we listen for, that's why questions are so important, as we mentioned earlier in this conversation, is we want to listen for emotions because we want to directly address them. So that's critical. So when we're focused on their emotions and we are working through this conversation using active listening skills, what I've found is the more faithfully I do that, the less tempted I am to become emotional. Because I'm using their energy for good. What I know when I'm tired and I'm hungry and I've come home from a long day and maybe one of my children who I dearly love gets on my nerves, sometimes I'll match their emotional intensity. And so then I do a reset. just like where we give the example of naming your own emotion, do a reset, say, you know what, I'm sorry, I'm not handling this very well. And you go right into active listening. If you've trained those 8 techniques, they are available to you anytime that you will it. And so I've had good luck in my life now as I've made that a habit. Even when I slip up, because I will, we're human beings, we're imperfect, I can say, you know what, I'm sorry. And in my mind, it's reframing this conversation. And I go, right, I'll ask a great. That's where the open-ended questions, the million-dollar questions, are wonderful, because they're the perfect springboard from you becoming emotional into you getting back on track with what you know works. So I ask a great question, and now I have what needs to be fed into the active listening cycle to really begin to calm your own emotions and make it about the other person, to be empathetic.
Awesome. I love what you said earlier about anticipating a potential negative altercation or a confrontation, something that might come up that arouses anger or frustration. And I love that you called out stoicism and basically took from the stoic playbook, because I think it was Marcus Aurelius that had like a morning mantra that he would basically say to himself about, when I wake up, I'm going to deal with ungrateful people or dishonest people. And they're like this because they can't tell good from evil. And so he was basically priming himself that, you know, throughout the day, this is the likelihood of this happening is probably going to be pretty high, but I'm priming myself that it's going to happen. And so he's basically telling himself on how to deal with those emotions when they come up.
Right. And so you can, you know, all the way through Western tradition, all the people that are worthy of study, and in the Eastern tradition too, by the way, that mantra in varying forms and in varying expressions in my studies, I have encountered it. There is something that is wise and is universally wise about encountering grumpy people and loving them anyhow. So if that was a listening t-shirt, I think I could probably sell it, especially as a parent of 5. So that's it in a nutshell. Like, anticipate. That is the best use of active listening. Reasonable people that you trust, and this is often like negotiators, we sit around and talk about this over a beer, right? Is you don't have to use active listening techniques in a sense with people that you really have a strong trust relationship with. You can say whatever you want and they will respect that. And they can say whatever they want and you can respect that. But active listening is how you get to those trust relationships.
Yes.
Because we all start out as strangers in this world. And we build our friends by being attentive to them and by, when we hear their story, treating it with respect. And that is, you can do that with anybody, even people that are not disposed to trust you. And even people, quite frankly, that start out as your adversary, whether that's in a procurement, a negotiation, or in my situation, a street encounter. If you approach it with good self-care, but also great listening, that's how you turn enemies into friends.
Yeah. I love what you said there, treating their story with respect. Can you expand on that? Why is it important to treat their story with respect?
Because the story is them and they are the story. Like, we all have this story. I think this is a big part of what we talked about the first time I was on your podcast. Like, you can't separate that. Like, your story, Mark, is so important, because your story is all your experiences, by the way. It's everything you've done. It's everything you're thinking about right now and all your hopes and dreams. And it's where you're going to be, you hope, in 5 years, right? That's your story. If I get that, then in a sense, I've got you. And then the best understanding of that, like, I get you, I understand you, and we can work together. And if we reject the story, unfortunately, then by the same measure, then I'm rejecting the person. So if I judge where you've been, if I invalidate where you're at right now, and if I dismiss what your hopes and dreams are, then I've failed as a leader and a lover, and you and I will not work together. And that'll be your choice, not mine. Because you'll understand, I don't care, I don't understand, and I am not to be trusted. So I think that is so critical, to receive people's stories with respect. Don't judge the story. Don't judge the person. Just learn more and learn deeper too. It's not about information. Listen for the emotions. Listen for the hopes and dreams. Listen for what's motivating them right now. And I think you will actually appreciate the story and the person much, much more. We get wrapped up about who people are, and that's kind of a Western thing, by the way, but personality and ability is important. But when we value people because of their personality or their ability, we get in trouble fast, because I'll make a judgment that I don't want to listen to you on the basis of your personality and your ability. And that is really, what can you do for me? And I will miss out on all these other rich stories. And by the way, you don't know who you need to do what for you in the future. It's much better just to make friends along the way, because life tends to be circular. And I have seen such benefit in my personal and professional life simply by listening to everyone without any consideration for what they can do for me.
I love that. I think what you said there really speaks to questions as well, because if you're open to their story and you're respectful of that story, it's going to refine the quality of questions that you ask as well.
Oh, yes. I mean, the reason why people can judge you as a leader and as a lover by how you ask a question, because baked into the question and how you ask it is your intention as a leader. There's really only two modes you can be in when you ask a question as a person with any kind of authority. And that is this: you can be advocating when you ask a question. And we already talked about that. Those are the ultimate garbage of garbage questions. Those are the ones that supply the answer with the question, right? Those are the ones that try to change somebody's mind and influence their behavior just with the question. That's advocacy. And there may be a time for that later on in the relationship. But when you're trying to gather information, when you're trying to understand people and stories, it is playing with fire. And the other way you can ask a question is with a spirit of inquiry. And that's what people want. That is what people respond to positively. That is what makes people open up and share more than they might have otherwise intended to when they started the conversation. And that is what will make people follow leaders to the very gates of hell, is when leaders truly inquire and then base their policy and decisions upon the great stories they hear within their organization. That's a healthy culture. When leaders are just trying to convince everybody to do what they want and there is no spirit of inquiry, that's an unhealthy culture and people will be looking to jump ship. That's my experience in all the industries that I've helped.
Do you think that the reason that there's that spirit of inquiry and the reason that people would follow people like that is because inquiry is a result of just being genuinely curious?
Yes, curious. And so inquiry, like I said, it's discovery and encounter. And there's no way that you would enjoy that and do that faithfully and habitually if you were not a person who is truly curious about other folks. And that means having an appreciation for them. Yeah. But there's more to it because... And I think some of your listeners right now are going, wait a minute, is he saying, oh my? Because if you are actually asking questions that invite people to tell you their story, which you don't know right now, and you don't know the answer to the question, and you can't control it, then we're also talking about the spirit of inquiry is directly related to vulnerability and humility.
Yes.
Because what if you ask $1 million question? Here's one. What one thing would you change about our corporate culture? And their answer is you. Are you ready for that? Yeah. That's going to take a humble leader to say, what would you change? And then to say, I would change your leadership style, because you don't often ask good questions. I was on LinkedIn the other day and this nut from Kansas, Dan Oblinger, was talking about garbage questions, and you're a garbage questioner. And somebody tells you that, there's only one correct answer. And that is, thank you for telling me that. I know that's hard to tell your boss. I'm going to reflect upon that and I'm going to try to make a change. And I'm probably going to ask for your help in that. Anything else is a trap. If you try to defend yourself, if you try to argue, if you try to point out how bad they are asking questions, then you've just failed as a leader. And you didn't have to. You could have asked a garbage question and said, hey, everything's great in the culture, right? And they're like, yep. And then you move on and you avoided that minefield. But this is what I'll tell you is you've wallpapered over the problem. You also failed as a leader. So the only way out of the minefield is true spirit of inquiry and true humility, being vulnerable to the truth, so that you can make the right changes as a leader, and it's going to be painful.
Yeah, I love that. You've got to be willing to accept the answer that you
get. Yeah, and that's where we go right back. How do you, again, treating the answer with respect, treating the story with respect. If you don't like the story, guess what? It's not your story. So you can't argue, you can't defend, you can't make it personal and try to turn the tables and one up the insult. You have to understand it's not an insult. You asked. They are doing the kindest thing that a follower can tell a leader, and that is the truth. And you are halfway to a total moral victory because you asked with a spirit of inquiry and you composed yourself with humility and vulnerability, and then somebody actually took you up on your offer. Now, the other half of the victory is respecting the answer and trying to make changes that you think are appropriate. I do get clients that ask me, well, what if I totally disagree? I'm like, great, don't say that. Thank them for providing their perspective. Only they can provide that. It's totally invaluable. You can never acquire it or procure it anywhere else. And they gave it to you. It doesn't mean you have to do what they say, because you didn't give up your authority when you asked the question. You set it aside temporarily. You still have to decide what's best for you and for the company. and you will make much better decisions when you are informed by the perspectives of everyone around you that is influential. And you will quickly lose that capability. You will lose that amazing resource if you don't respect people's stories.
Yes, love that. Totally agree with you. Dan, fascinating conversation, man. Every time I read your stuff, every time I get on a call with you, I'm always pleasantly delighted and amazed at the value that you provide in each interaction. So thank you for continuing to provide just incredible value online to everyone who reads your stuff. It's great, man.
Thank you so much, Mark. You are
and
a friend.
Thank you so much for being on the show. And how do people follow you online?
And I hope you agree. I think the best way is for free. You can rent me. You don't have to buy me. So get on LinkedIn. And the only thing is you'll invest is a little bit of your time. Get on LinkedIn, connect with me or follow me. Dan Oblinger, Hostage Negotiator. You'll find me very quickly. And hit me up, start following my stuff. I interact with guys like you, Mark, other hostage negotiators, other sales and procurement professionals. We tend to have a fairly humorous, but also, I hope, valuable time. Videos and articles, and sometimes just banter back and forth in the comments. And certainly, I would love, if you have a question, if you're like, I wish I could ask them a question right now, LinkedIn direct message, hit me up. Hit my inbox and let's talk. I awesome. Truly want to use LinkedIn to develop conversations. I do it to make money too. But man, why not have fun in the process of prospecting and provide value for free? That's the best use of LinkedIn. And then certainly if you want to invest a little bit of money, you can go buy my books. There are two. They're on Amazon. One is a Kindle, but they're both Kindles and paperbacks. One is Life or Death Listening, and the other is The 28 Laws of Listening. Check it out. Look at the reviews. Read the descriptions. You'll know what to do.
Awesome. Thanks again for being on the show, Dan. Enjoy the rest of the day. Listeners, I highly encourage you to reach out to Dan. He is just a wealth of knowledge when it comes to listening, question quality, all things communication. And I know that you're going to have great feedback on this. And thanks so much for listening. Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go on to iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.